basing this information on is from several, from some women's psychology, Carol Gilligan in A Different Voice, and from women's psychology by, help me, I don't remember her name, Jean Baker Miller. And this book that I is Men and Please Under You Just Don't Understand Men and Women in Conversation by Deborah Tannen. Idea is that men and women have been acculturated, have developed psychologically different, so that the goal for most women in relationships is connection, the goal for most men in relationship is to maintain their independence. Now, we went through this all week about the fact that these are either ends of the spectrum and lots of people fit in toward here. There are men who desire more connection and work toward more connection. There are women who desire more independence and work toward that independence in their relationships. But when we get into conversations with men or with women, it's important for us to understand that we are talking with some people who are coming from a different culture, so to speak. So just as you are concerned about being able to understand someone who comes from an African culture or someone who comes from a Latin American culture, it's also important for you to understand the, quote, culture that a man or a woman comes from when you're talking with them, or otherwise misunderstandings can occur. And we have had misunderstandings in our sessions, which have been, of course, with my bias is that those misunderstandings came because we were not attuning ourselves to the different culture that was speaking. This evening, we've talked about the role of listening in that, how men and women listen differently. The last week we've talked about the role of conflict, how men and women approach conflict differently. And we have talked about, we've talked about rapport and report talk, intimate conversations, and how women like to be able to know the little intimacies of what's going on, and men feel much more comfortable with kind of the factual reporting of what's happening. This evening, what I'd like to talk about is things that happen not only in the interpersonal connection, but also outside of one-on-one relationships. We've touched on that a little bit in some of our sessions, but not in many. And so we're going to go beyond the personal for a little bit this evening, and talk about what happens in the job, what happens in the workplace, what happens when you talk with your other colleagues, mostly outside the workplace, outside of your intimate relationships. And the title of this session is, It's Not What You Say, But Who Says It. And studies have shown, and I'll get into the, I'll talk a little bit more about that, but studies have shown that oftentimes, when women say something, when women say certain things, and a man would say the same thing, that there's a negative connotation on how a woman says it than how a man says it. And I'd like to start first off with, start the ball rolling with discussion, and please feel free to discuss, because this is a very discussion-oriented group. I'd like to start off with my favorite topic, and I'm sure it would be yours too, with nagging. we kept this till very last. We haven't talked about this week at all, and I'm surprised this topic, even the word, hasn't come up at all with nagging. What is nagging? What does nagging mean? What's your definition of nagging? Anybody?
Just repeating something over and over and over and not quitting.
Okay, repeating something over and over and over and not quitting. Okay, anybody else have another definition?
Well, scolding, complaining about the conduct of someone else.
Complaining about the conduct of someone else. Okay, just one time or?
No, this thing, I'm not building on.
Okay.
Repeatedly.
Okay, repeatedly complaining about the conduct of someone else. Okay. All right. Anything, anybody else? Nagging.
Being heard.
Being heard?
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me a little?
Well, you know, if you're not heard when you say something the first time, you just keep repeating it.
Okay. All right. Yes. Okay. So being heard. So you repeat it. Heard idea of saying it over and over again. You repeat it because you've not been heard. Okay. Anybody else? Who identifies with that definition of repeating something over and over because you haven't been heard? Who can identify with that? With that. All right. Who identifies with the nagging definition of speaks like scolding or just repeating something over and over again? Some people aren't identifying with any of these definitions. Okay. Well, what I saw in the hands that were raised is that most of the women identified with I'm not being heard. And so I'm going to repeat it. B-E-I-N-G. And so I'm going to repeat it. And that's very classic. That goes very much with connection. A woman will ask the man, will you please take out the garbage? And the man will say, yeah, uh-huh, I'll take out the garbage. Okay. 15 minutes goes by. The garbage hasn't been taken out. The woman will say, would you please take out the garbage? And the man says, yeah, I'll take out the garbage. You know, it's still not. She knows, she really knows that if he understood how important it was for her to take out the garbage, I mean, for him to take out the garbage, he would do it. And so she says again, you know, and she's saying it a third time, and she's feeling like, you know, he's not hearing me. I wonder if I'm not connected with him. I know he cares about me, and so because he cares about me, he will take out the garbage when I ask him if he really understood that I wanted him to take out the garbage. So, will you please take out, I ask you to take out the garbage. Please take out the garbage. The man, on the other hand, what's your agenda?
I'll take it out when I'm ready to.
I'll take it out when I'm ready to. Yes, yes. Which is independence. I will set the schedule here. This has nothing to do with how much I care for you. This has nothing to do with how much I love you. What it has to do with is that I will set the schedule. You will not set the schedule for me. It's maintaining the male's independence. And so what do you end up with? You end up with the woman feeling how? In this situation, where's the woman feeling now? She's asked three times.
Ignored, but she doesn't count.
Ignored, I don't count. All right, what's the man feeling now? He's been asked three times.
Negative.
Okay, nag and negative. All right, he feels negative about that. He doesn't like that. He feels like someone's impinging on his freedom. Do you see where what's happening is a conflict in language styles, a conflict in culture? If If by the woman asking that the garbage be taken out, it is her, and by having that done, it maintains intimacy for her. Now, I know that intimacy and garbage is a long, you know, it's a big stretch here. So that maintains intimacy for her. And if by the man setting his own schedule, he is maintaining his independence, these two needs are coming in conflict, aren't they? Mm-hmm. So what I propose, at least in and hope, is that in situations like that, men and women can look and understand where he's coming from. If the man understands that she's coming from a point of intimacy, she's coming from a point of seeing connection here, his view may change. Would it change? I mean, I guess I need to ask you. If you understood that that's where your significant other, the woman that's talking to you, that's where her need is coming from, what might your response be to that? What are some of the possible responses you could have, understanding that language?
Well, maybe to you might say, sure, I'll take it out, I'm busy right now, but I'll do it in 10 minutes or something like that.
Okay, a little more information. I understand your need, and this is when I'm going to do it, okay? Any other response? There's some other responses that could go on, too.
Take it out yourself.
You could what?
Take it out yourself.
Okay, that your response would be take it out yourself?
No, I didn't say it would be necessarily mine. You said all your
responses. All right, it might
be.
How would that...
Other responses.
How would that respond to also that understanding that you have of her need for intimacy? What?
She'd feel abandoned.
Uh-huh. And so your response to her need for intimacy would be, I'm not giving
it
to you.
Yeah,
right. Forget it. And so that is also, you know, a real clear message when you have that.
At a level, though, he is. By, instead of just, and it goes on for 15 minutes. He's given her a response that says, do it yourself.
Right, exactly. But at this point, we're talking about understanding that need for intimacy. We're assuming that the man understands the need, and his one response could be, I'll do it in 10 minutes, giving her information. Another response is, if the man doesn't care to be intimate with her at all, he can say, you know, do it yourself. So, I mean, it doesn't maintain it in intimacy, but that's his purpose. Well, what about for the woman? Now, I don't, you know, because I think that men and women need to understand this. So how about the woman understanding the man's need for independence when she asks him to do something? How can she ask him to do it?
When can you take out the garbage?
What?
When can you take out the garbage?
Okay, all right. So letting him know that you want the garbage taken out and letting him determine when the garbage would be taken out. Yeah, I think that's an excellent. I think that's an excellent response. Anybody else? Any other one?
Perhaps she could lay out a fact or two as to why she needs his help. I'm assuming, or is it by intimacy? Do you mean that she needs some understanding as to what, like, the evening is for her? You know, she's really busy. She's pressured. She's got three kids to put to bed, and could he just do this one thing? If that's, you know, that's one possible scenario, and she would like that to be understood. Is this what you mean?
Well, what we're talking about here with intimacy versus independence is that basically the woman's psychology, the woman's makeup is toward a need to maintain independent, need to maintain intimacy, no matter who she's talking to. No, this is not just male and female intimacy. A woman will attempt to maintain intimacy in all of her relationships because that's primary. That's very important. And also, the man will, again, this is on either end of the spectrum, but when push comes to shove, the man will attempt to maintain independence in all of his relationships. And he does that in different ways, just as the woman does in different ways.
Would you say that this is, I'm up here. would you say that these sort of things that you're talking about are changing? Because, I mean, I wouldn't think twice if my girlfriend or something asked me to take out the garbage because I love her so much that, I mean, there it doesn't seem like it would be that big of a deal to get up and put away the garbage,
right.
So I wouldn't do it.
And it's not a matter of taking out the garbage or whatever. The matter, what I'm trying to get across is that the way, you know, the way that it's done. I agree that even the men who continue to say, yeah, I'll take it out, yeah, I'll take it out, and they'll talk about nagging, love their wives, love their significant others, and are interested in taking out that garbage. It's not that they won't take it out. What I'm saying is that oftentimes men and women don't understand the culture that the woman is coming from in her language, or that the culture that the man is coming from in his language, even though they both come from a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant background, that men and women are psychologically, psychosocially, they grow differently. They develop differently, with emphasis here for the woman and here for the man.
Because this is true in it doesn't have to be a relationship. I mean, it can be boss,
right,
work relationship.
Exactly. Yeah, and sure, you can be. Okay. Let's look at the work relationship. Have we talked enough about nagging? Because I'm going to kind of skip on. Does anybody else want to say anything more about nagging? Any experiences you've had with it that you'd like to share?
That hits too close to home.
Okay, the other thing is, when you say, and I think this is important too, and we talked a lot about negative feminine stereotypes during this past week when a lot of you weren't here, but when you think of a nag, what comes into your mind?
The female.
And I think that's important to think about. I mean, I think that's a very negative term. And to use that, it's often, and often, who uses it? Does a woman say to a woman, you're a nag?
No.
Who says it to a woman?
Husband.
Oh, yeah. All right. And that's a power play. That maintains that this is another, that the status that I'm here and you're here because you're the nag and I'm, and that's such a negative term that I'm above you with that. So I think that's important to remember that it can be used, that term can be used to maintain a higher status, a power status over the person that it's used against. And I guess the question I have would be, why would someone call someone else a nag? You know what?
Put them down.
To put them down.
Power. Could be a little threatened.
Yeah, it could be a lot of guilt too. You know, okay. People might be feeling guilty about themselves a little bit about
in my case, Bob, geez, I'm taking the garbage out. Please don't bother me, you know, but there's guilt to it.
Okay, there's guilt, but as a response to that guilt, instead of saying, I feel bad,
right.
I didn't take the garbage out,
right.
Which would make your connection to be one of connection and symmetry. Okay, people, symmetry, or what? Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Symmetry, the defensive reaction is you're a nag. Then you can maintain your one-upmanship, you can maintain the one above. Okay. I think we also find that in the workplace. And let's go to the workplace.
Yeah. Oh, I just want to make a comment about how most women, not all women, but most women process things. It's verbally. And women will talk, and a lot of men don't process things verbally. So a woman will be talking. She doesn't feel like the man hears her because he waits till he's good and ready to say something, because he waits till it's all got it all together,
mm-hmm.
and independent, got it right, got it perfect.
Right.
But a woman many times will process something and ramble on and on. And she's waiting for the man to say something.
Ramble.
And he's not gonna until he's good and ready, because he's gotta have it perfect. Or,
okay.
Or all figured out, or whatever.
Okay.
It's just the way we process things.
Yeah, I ramble on and on, you know? I'm gonna stop us sometimes when we do that. If we talk about somebody rambling on and on, what does that mean?
Well,
they don't have anything to say. They don't have anything worthwhile to say, so that they're rambling. When again, in fact, what the woman is doing with that is going at it, maintaining that connection. And I think you put it rightly that the man may maintain silence to keep his independence, to wait till he has it the way he wants to say it. And when we talk with one another, when men and women talk with one another, it's real important to always remember the goal that the other person is going toward. That the goal for the woman is the connection, to maintain that connection. And that the goal for the man is to maintain that independence. And so if a woman continues to talk, maybe in the back of your mind, understanding that the reason that that conversation is continuing is because there needs to maintain connection. And if the man maintains silence, if in the back of the woman's mind that can understand that they're maintaining their independence because that's important for them, then I think we can ask about that. We can check those things out. And we can maybe avoid some of the misunderstandings that occur in some relationships. Okay, we were going to the workplace. Let's do. I feel like I'm lecturing a little more than I have in the past, and partly is because I realize this is the last night for this topic, and there are some things that I'd like to get done. But please jump in anytime if I'm saying something that you don't agree with, or you want to comment on, or you want to share an experience with, because that's what this is all about. This is your discussion. This is not, you're not in a classroom and I'm not a lecturer. Yes?
In that case, I'll ask a question.
Please.
The woman at her is talking about that. A woman's tendency, making it a gender difference, to process verbally, whereas there are many women, and I don't know what the percentages are, who are more introverted and do process internally.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I happen to be one of them, so she was describing me perfectly as a man, and that was
right.
That was a little confusing for me. How does that relate to the gender difference?
It puts you probably more toward the middle of that long continuum. You know, I mean, this is at one end, way out here, and this is at another end. I know that I found this week in Holden that making dichotomies out of this is not always the best way to do it. And I haven't developed in my own mind yet how to get this information to you without putting it in the dichotomous frame. But if you find yourself feeling like you're, or you know, knowing that, well, shoot, this is how I respond to all this kind of stuff. I'm over here. Does that mean I'm a man? No. What that means is that you also probably have some needs for connection, but you use both areas. And where we get to the title of you just don't understand is when men and women are at either end of the continuum and aren't able to hear that other side, aren't able to understand that other side. So for you, in conversations with men, you may not have a lot of problem in some of these areas. Because the need to maintain intimacy either is not as strong, or you're understanding where they're coming from. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. Yeah.
Could we just carry that a little bit further? What if the man were to ask the woman to do something?
Okay. What happens?
What happens?
What happens if? What happens with you? If a man asks you to do something, what do you do?
I usually do it.
Right away?
If I'm able.
Uh-huh. And if you're not able, what do you do?
I'll do it in a little while, usually is my response.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I try to do it as soon as possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody else have any other experience than that?
Yeah. Would you say, I'm a period. I don't know, this is hard for me. Would you say that as time goes on, these roles are somewhat changing, that women are more wanting independence as time goes on, and men are also looking for intimacy, and it's kind of getting to be more of a balance? Because I know myself as a person love to get into wonderful conversations with women and with men, and connect with them. And so, as the woman down here talked about, I feel the opposite. When you're talking about women, I feel like you're describing maybe me or some other men.
And this week in Holden, that's what we found a lot, is that trying to stick men in a real hard description this way, or trying to stick women in a real, you know, far description, was not typical of what the Holden community was feeling, what they were expressing, that they all felt like they understood this, you know. And maybe that's someone pointed that out earlier in the week, is that it's important to understand these far ends of the spectrum, not necessarily needing to identify with them. Because when you can understand the far ends of the spectrum, then you can more easily communicate with all people through either end. So maybe that's what we need to be saying, is that we're describing far ends of the spectrum so you understand that, so that your communication can be much clearer where you are, and not necessarily feeling, well, if I'm not here, then I must not be a man, or if I'm not over there, then I must not be a woman.
Am I right in assuming then that the gender assignments were because of socialization, or how we are culturally socialized? That's why it's being presented in the way that it has the gender dichotomy?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Have you found it to be different in other places than something like?
Than in Holden?
Yes,
I have. Where back in the outside real world, where I've done that, I've found that men and women are much further separated. Mm-hmm. There's also, there's also that connection, but there seem to be less concern about the dichotomy issue there.
I have a comment.
Go ahead.
Back to what Greeny was saying about.
This is my first meeting, so you'll have to forgive me. You guys have probably been going to a lot of meetings.
Okay, most everybody in this room hasn't been. There are maybe about a half a dozen people who have been here for more than one.
But back, reversing roles. men maybe, thinking independently. I don't know that I'd ask you to do it. I'd do it first myself, and probably, if I didn't want to do it, tell you. Take out the garbage. First, I do it myself, though.
So we have. How many men identify with that idea that first you would do it yourself before you would even ask, or you would even consider asking? And if you had made a determination that you didn't want to do it, you wouldn't ask them to do it. You'd say to the person, "Take out the garbage." Anybody identify with that?
The first half.
Well, I can identify with that particular task, but it isn't just garbage. The male-female roles are changing in sharing of household responsibilities. Men are at least have the possibility of becoming more nurturing, more, and so on. But that doesn't negate anything of what you said about growing up thinking of ourselves as male because independent and because in control and because the powerful member of the team and the like, so that the same dynamics can go haywire even with the so-called liberated male.
Mm-hmm. Because that wiring is still there.
Yeah, we got it from childhood on.
Right.
Who's in charge here?
The wiring is still there. A lot of times you might find that in stressful situations, you revert back to where the wiring is, because there's not an override.
Yeah. Wow, well, I'm sorry. Yes. I'm not sure which book of the ones that you recommended there. I think it was maybe Carol Gilligan's book.
Uh-huh.
It seems to me this is where this came from, that it's not only the enculturation, it's not only our stereotypes for male and female, but it also is that in the womb that there's testosterone and then there's estrogens, and it, literally the brain has been bathed with a different hormone, and that does make us different, even though we say, we're trying to learn to be more balanced and to have have it not be so stereotyped. But it's a matter of, like you say, the wiring. It's a nice way to say it. I would affirm that. The other thing I wanted to comment about was that we've done this kind of a study for about just the most recent 6 weeks in our church with men and women in an adult forum. And we found that the very thing that you're finding here is people could not connect with these extremes. And so what we began to do, rather than say, well, do all, it was a violence, power struggle kind of thing, where it led to violence and sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And so we were trying to figure out the continuum on that as to, is this more male or is this more female? Mm-hmm. And what we finally had to say is, we just used the word gender, because we couldn't identify as either male or female. For instance, do males tend to carry guns more than women? Well, it isn't true anymore. We can't speak in terms of male-female as much as we can. It's all blurred. So it was a real interesting experiment to do that in terms of trying to make this kind of identification, and we found ourselves not totally able to do that. Uh-huh. Like we maybe thought we could.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I'd be curious to know where you're from. What city?
Spokane, Washington.
And you say women tote guns in Spokane as much as men do.
It's half
of
the word.
Okay, I want to go on with this, and maybe, we were trying to get, let me see where we are, trying to get into the workplace. So let's do that. Been trying all evening, haven't I? Still haven't gotten it. Okay, it's not what's said, it's who says it. And again, you're going to have to go with probably your own gut with this. And but how many of you have ever been supervised by a woman?
Okay, good. How have you found that experience?
I hated it.
It was difficult.
Okay, what was difficult about it?
This woman only talked to the male on her staff. She didn't talk to females.
Okay.
I think she enjoyed the power.
Okay, what made you think that?
Well, because I worked in many jobs and I felt my abilities were just as great as hers, but I think she just liked to lower her power.
Okay, and how did she lower her power? What did she do to lower her power?
Soft put-downs.
Being more...
Not positive.
Okay, like?
Oh, I don't know. Just she was not comfortable to work with.
Okay, all right, so soft put-downs, she lorded her power. I guess I'm really trying to find some specifics that anybody else have that same experience with a woman supervisor, that they felt like they lorded power, that they did put-downs?
I didn't have that experience. I just had sort of the opposite one.
Okay, who had positive experiences with a woman supervisor? Okay, tell me about how you felt they were positive.
This was in an educational setting, and so I was working with deans and assistant deans that were women, and I was on the faculty. I felt very comfortable.
Uh-huh.
I felt they were extremely forward-thinking in how we women were stretching ourselves with maintaining our home environments and being professional at the same time.
How did she convey that to you?
She actually would say it in that many words.
Okay, so she would, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sir, you had a female supervisor and you felt like you had a positive.
I've had both.
Uh-huh.
I teach school and I work for, I've had four women principals.
Uh-huh.
And one of the women principals was a very strong person, powerful, no matter who it was. Her way was right, it's gonna be that way. Don't bother me.
Uh-huh.
And she was acted the same way towards male or female
mm-hmm.
staff. And then I've had women principals that just because I'm a man, I've had it made. Because there's no way that the woman would ever say anything to me, even when I needed to have it said to me, just wouldn't say.
What, with the strong woman principle, how did you feel about that?
I think I felt, boy, I watched what I did. I made sure that I kept my nose clean and I told the line. I.
Mm-hmm. And you've had male principles also?
Yes.
How would you describe the male principles?
Pretty much do your thing and don't bother me. Just don't let me know. Don't, you know, they don't want to take me on so much. As long as they don't know, that's fine.
Okay, would you equate those with the soft female principles? Or would you equate those male principles with the more firm female principle?
I think I equate them with more with the firm female.
Okay. But your reaction to that female principle was not the same as with the male principle.
No, it was different.
Uh-huh. Why do you think that was? I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot. Why does anybody think that might have meant? I mean, it might not have been for him, but in the situation that he described, why might it have been different for you, for him? What would be your speculation?
Well, that's getting back rather to me, I guess, because I think how my lady supervisor, this was in a clinic setting in a hospital.
Uh-huh.
It was a multi-use disciplinary, high volume clinic setting, and everything very precisely
uh-huh.
done.
Uh-huh.
She treated, I think, the men very differently than the women.
Okay, so you felt like he was like the softer female principal?
She was, yeah, she was very definitely softer towards the men and the women.
All right.
I mean, it wasn't just me, it was, you know, most of the women.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Jen, yes. Yes.
Well, I wanted to say something about, I was saying it was the opposite experience. I did want to, I've had both kinds of supervisors, and I'm thinking of a couple female supervisors I've had, and the problem that I've had with them is not that they were lorded power. It seemed more like they were uncomfortable with their power, and it seemed to me like the way that they could relate to me the best in that case was to treat me like a child, kind of. It seemed like maybe, you know, they weren't really comfortable saying, I'd like you to do this and this. They were more comfortable, well, now we're going to try this, or, you know, in sort of a way that bugged me. It would have been better to just be straightforward and be comfortable with the fact that they were a supervisor.
Okay. All right. And now we're going to try this.
I don't know if that was exactly
okay,
what
I know, going. I know, but, and that's, studies have shown that when women are in supervisory positions, they often appear to other people in one of two ways. Either they appear as weak, or they appear as that they're going to lord it over someone else. The ones that appear as weak use the symmetry. Here we go. I get to spell this word again. Use the technique of symmetry, which is let's stay connected, let's stay at the same level. They use the method of consensus. They attempt to arrive. Yeah, you're shaking your head.
No.
Did you see that all of the women did that, or just the weaker ones did that?
Well, I guess, yeah, my perception, which I'm not sure is really right at the time,
uh-huh.
but I felt that way.
Those weak ones attempted to arrive at situations with consensus, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, and that's a very feminine way of looking at the situation, because if we can work together and arrive at consensus, then we can get the job done. We stay in symmetry. We stay connected. No one is higher than the other. Okay?
You're really casting a different light on my experience than it was. So I want to clear that up.
Okay.
You have a particular supervisor. And when I said she treated me like a child, and now we're going to try this, it was more of a case of she'd tell me to do simple things that I could remember easily, but then keep, you know, but then mention again. Or, I mean, it wasn't like,
and it sounded, it sounds like she was very uncomfortable in the supervisory role.
I suppose, yeah, but it wasn't like this. It was more like I said, like talking to a child or tell me to do the simplest things and then feeling she had to repeat them and
uh-huh.
that sort of thing. But I mean, I've had experiences with men that have varied too. I have one supervisor that's the now we're going to try this type.
Okay.
He's not that comfortable either, and he's always talking with me that way. So
mm-hmm.
I guess I wanted to clarify that.
Okay, all right. Okay, I guess what point am I making? The point I'm making is that women are perceived very differently, I believe, than men are perceived as supervisors. If you have a female supervisor that is, let's get this done, this is how we're going to do it, we're going to step it up like this, often she's perceived as being lorded over the power. You know, this is a power-hungry woman. You know, she's not, and especially that's with men and women. Now, the men might be more comfortable when the woman says, okay, this is the way it's going to go, and this is how we need to do it. He may not particularly be comfortable that the woman is telling him to do that, but that's a more comfortable situation for him. Females find women supervisors who do that as
lording the power over them, trying to be power hungry. And I propose that the reason strong supervisors are perceived negatively by women supervisors is because they can't maintain that connection with them. They see someone who is deviating from what they generally expect from a woman, which is to maintain that symmetry, maintain the connection. Okay. Now this isn't with everyone. I mean, and some people may definitely have a. But go ahead. You disagree.
Yeah, I really disagree because I've worked for 28 years,
uh-huh.
and I've worked in three different professions. Anyway, I won't get into all that. But I really feel that this woman was really.
Was she the only woman supervisor you have ever had in 20 years?
No.
Okay.
That's what I was trying to say.
Okay.
No.
So you've had other women supervisors.
I've enjoyed very good relationships with others.
Okay. And tell me about the other relationships you've had with the women supervisors.
In the school district, it was very, very favorable. This is what your program is. This is what you're going to be doing. I'd carry that out, implement it, get good reports, that type of thing.
Uh-huh. So you felt in those situations that the connection was maintained?
Very good.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, again, this is, you know, this is just how some studies have shown this, and how some information has been conveyed through those studies. Not every situation, I think, is going to be the same. I think, though, getting back to this situation, is that oftentimes the man will feel more positively toward that direct approach, not the consensus, because that's because they don't need to maintain that connection. They maintain that independence that way.
Just a word about supervisors in general. I find that the ones that have been the best for me, or instructors, you know, at the college or whatever, are the ones that do both. They're able to direct and they're able to connect, and that's men and women.
Women, right?
That's both. I mean.
Uh-huh. Okay. I may be trying to draw on that dichotomous of supervisors, where you've all had different experiences with supervisors. So you may not feel that this applies to the experiences that you've had. Does any of this apply to anybody's experience in here? We've talked to a couple people who it doesn't apply to. Does it apply to anybody's?
I was going to bring up, it maybe doesn't apply, but in my work, I had, for a period of years, had as a sort of a supervisor, lab technician, women,
uh-huh.
that also in turn then worked with graduate students and people that did research work in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And by and large, I think that these women were able to work with men and students from different countries better than any man could have done. You know, they I don't know why, it just seemed like they were able to, maybe they were more sensitive to feelings, and I can vouch for that, because students that are long gone now, you know, out into the world, always uh-huh. ask back about so and so, and they were women. And so it's very, very favorable. I'm just wondering. So it's coming at it from a different viewpoint. I myself not had a woman
uh-huh.
supervisor,
uh-huh.
but I think that going the other way, I think it's very favorable.
Okay. All right. Anybody else have an experience? Yeah.
Well, you know my situation. We work together, so. but I think it's this classic situation where, in our environment, the men have been used to having men supervisors, and this past year I was put in that position, and it was so unusual because the men who I was then directing were expecting to be told what to do, exactly what to do, and that was not the way I was operating. So it was really interesting. It took a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months, to get them to understand that wasn't the way I worked. And I think it's been positive. I'm trying to assess how I need to proceed from now, but from here. But it was definitely the case for them.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for sharing. All right, just a few more. I just want to touch on a couple more things about it's not what's said, but who says it. Does anybody know what a tag question is?
Isn't it? Doesn't she? Won't she?
Yeah. It's a nice day, isn't it? Okay. One of the things that some studies have shown, and they've done like blind studies, is that both men and women use tag questions. But the perception of how that tag question is used and the person who uses that tag question differs on whether it's a man or a woman. So in some blind, in studies where people have listened to headphones, and they've just had different questions, and a man would use a tag question or a woman would use a tag question. Whenever the woman used the tag question, it's a nice day, isn't it? Or would you like to, it's pretty, it sounds nice, doesn't it? Or whatever those tag questions, the perception was that the woman was less intelligent, that the woman really didn't have as much knowledge about the subject, that she was probably less well-informed. When a man used the tag question, it was not perceived negatively. It was perceived that he was asking for more information, or in a very neutral sense. What's been your experience with tag questions? Have you ever noticed them when people use them?
I tend to bite my tongue because I always want to say, they say, like, no, it isn't. And then go on, I want to say that. But I don't.
Okay.
I think that'd be a very plus thing for a woman to do that. I wouldn't view it negatively. It seems to me that as I've said before this week, that one of the problems that I had as a man is being able to express feelings. And this does give you an opening to say, yes, I think it is a nice day. And they can kind of, and she might even say, well, do you like warm weather like this? And you'll say, well, yes, I do. So you start again, get that man talking, instead of being stuck over there and being this John Wayne type who doesn't tell you what the weather's like and doesn't tell you anything else.
Anybody else?
I do that a lot, like driving in the car. It's sort of to start conversation. And it is a way to connect for me. It's like, that is my goal. I know that it's a beautiful day. I already know that. But I'm looking for someone to kind of join me in that kind of symmetry again.
I do that a lot to connect. And I do that with men and women. And I have experienced men and women coming back to me as, oh, you poor dear, you don't understand, let me explain it to you, or that sort of feeling, sort of a one down, one up, one down. I get that from women and men, from that. So a lot of women don't come connect with me. They go up and, poor dear, let's let her know how her life really is, sort of thing. So is a tag question like that, is there some way it's said that would evoke that kind of response from someone?
According to the studies, it doesn't matter how the tag question is expressed, whether it's by the man or the woman. The impression is, or the summary is from the listeners, that if the woman has expressed that tag question, she has less ability or less knowledge about what the subject is about.
So women think
man.
That too, of women.
Huh?
Women think that of women.
Uh-huh. It was a study of men and women acknowledging
that. Yeah, I've experienced that with women.
Yeah, you said that.
Well, I was just going to say that there's an implication of a kind of a tentativeness that I'm not really sure, or I need to check it out with you, but I don't know what effect that would have on the perception of the difference between men and women. But a tag question is kind of like, well, I don't really deliver this statement with a power or authority.
Mm-hmm. And the perception was that if it wasn't delivered with power and authority, if a woman did that, then she had less knowledge of the subject. Where if a man did that, it wasn't that he had less knowledge of the subject, he was just opening it up for your conversation. And so it was, there was a very definite. Now this was one study, you know, there are lots of, I have not read about any other studies, and maybe there are other studies that don't agree with that.
Yeah. It can have sort of a manipulative edge to it though, can't it also, because it's sort of saying, isn't it, kind of looking for someone to agree with you. I've experienced that where it's kind of like, isn't it, like, it's harder to disagree rather than just making a plain statement. If you're kind of looking for the person to agree with you, it kind of gives it a different edge. I've experienced that as manipulative, so I can see how that would work into
For you, it would be harder for you to disagree with the person if they did a tag question. Mm-hmm. How about for any of the men?
Depends on what the tag question is. There's tag questions and there's tag questions. Yeah. One might be inviting conversation by starting off, really attempting to find out how the other person's feeling by focusing on safe terrain, mm-hmm. and inviting a response back. What do you think about this? But if then it's, don't you agree? I mean, the tone of voice and so on, the power that's implied in that question is, don't you dare disagree. It's really an imperative, not an inviting question. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's also in... that's why I'm a little bit surprised about the business that it doesn't matter how the thing is said. I understand the general structure which we're doing this week, but to me it would matter if my wife said something to elicit conversation to connect with me, than if I thought I was being set up.
Okay. I think, you know, the only time I would use that kind of question is when I honestly didn't know something and wanted to find out more. And I don't see that as negative at all, as admitting that you don't know everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just really wanting to find out information. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand where that comes across as being negative at all. And I guess I find that with both men and women. So. Okay. Well, I think in some instances, or in some areas, or with some people, that admitting that you don't know all of the information is not good, and that I think most often that happens with men. Not knowing this information is not something that you, unless they are in a classroom when the professor's up there and they ask the professor, which is obviously that they don't know the information from the professor. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it's a little bit more of a struggle. One last thing before we have to go, the phrase, I'm sorry. Okay?
In AA, which I have some friends, anyway, in AA's, I'm sorry is equated to another excuse to do it again.
Okay. Why is that?
It's almost an automatic response with kids. I'm talking about 13, 14, 15 years old. They just say, I'm sorry. And I was like, no, you're not. Stop. What did you just say? Well, I'm just saying
it's too quick. Well, I'd like to go with men and women in the use of the word I'm sorry. Women, when you use the word I'm sorry, what do you mean?
I'm sorry.
Well, you could be apologizing.
I feel regret.
Okay, you feel regret. Okay, but what else do you also mean sometimes? If someone has been talking to you about something and your response is, I'm sorry.
I think that often when I use the word I'm sorry, it means I use it in a compassionate way, and it is to connect with that person, not in a putting down sort of way that, mm-hmm. you know, that's, it's not pity, it is used more as a connection.
Women often use that phrase as a connecting phrase when after someone has said something, and they'll say, you know, oh, I'm sorry. And And the oftentimes the response, if it's to a man, is, well, you don't have to apologize. You didn't do anything wrong. And the woman is not saying, I did something wrong. What she is doing is empathizing. You know, I'm sorry to hear that. I feel badly for you. That's tough that that's happened to you. But that phrase is often misunderstood. And so the man's looking around and saying, well, what do you have to be sorry for? You know, you didn't do anything.
Well, isn't I'm sorry kind of a codependent thing? I mean, it's kind of, I mean, to me, hearing it right now, it's like you had power to make things differently, to make the outcome different.
Well, I would think if someone who had codependent tendencies said, I'm sorry, maybe for them it's codependent. But I don't think generically that the term I'm sorry is, quote, a codependent kind of thing. I think
when alcoholics and family members of alcoholics are also trained in AA to acknowledge promptly the character defects. So they can use the words, I'm sorry, in that context to signal to the other partner responsibility for a mistake.
Sure.
I blew this one, rather than staying in a position of arrogance and infallibility. I'm never wrong. I mean, that could be the classic alcoholic or codependent response is, I'm never going to admit I'm...